You're listening to Super Yacht Radio.
And welcome to Super Yacht Radio. And welcome to our 2021 celebrating the leaders in our industry. And for this, we have been catching up with the A-Crew winners from last year. And I had the pleasure today of catching up a guest before on the station, but nice to have him in another guise, this time Tristan Mortlock, who was the A-Crew Crew Award winner for mentorship this year. Tristan, welcome back. Nice to see you and Happy New Year.
Good to see you too. Happy New Year. And thank you for having me back on the radio. It's been a while. It's probably been about 4 or 5 months since I actually spoke to Dave on our last one. So
indeed,
thank you for welcoming me back. It's much appreciated.
Yeah. And lovely to see you again. It seems like a while since I've seen you in person, which was Monaco 2019.
It was a Monaco Yacht Show at Razzcast at 2019. Yes, I remember. It's a shame that we didn't manage to do the yacht shows again last in 2020. But it is what it is. So we've got to crack on with it, haven't we?
It is. Well, you know, I'm going to kind of circle back. But Tristan, very well known now in our yachting community, very well known in general now because of the huge rise since when I first met you in Monaco of Super Yacht Captain, which has been, you know, such a great series on YouTube. I will circle back and kind of find the story of how that developed.
But okay.
Before we begin all that, I would love to hear how it started for Tristan Mortlock. Where did your yachting kind of transition come? Was it that you were on a dinghy a lot when you were a kid and thought, I'd love to be on the water? Or is it going to be the accidental story that actually so many of our guests have of, oh, wasn't planning it, but, you know, ended up?
Well, you know what it is? It's a combination of both. Okay. Without, you know, sugarcoating it, the reality is that when I was growing up in my mid towards late teens, I was useless at pretty much everything in school. You know, I had no motivation, didn't enjoy it. I could never understand why we had to do things we don't enjoy. Surely, if you enjoy something, you will be better at it. You're good at it because you want to be good at it because you enjoy it. So when I got my GCSE exam results, they were terrible. I mean, it's all like E's and F's, and I've even got a couple of ungraded marks, to be honest with you. And so I approached my parents and I said, look, mum, dad, clearly I'm not happy in school. I'm not getting the results. I was in a private school, so it's costing them money. I was like, it's a waste of money. I want to go out there and I want to go and experience the world. I want to go and work and earn a living. And the thing is, my eldest brother set the pinnacle quite high. He's extremely academic. He did very well at university. He went on to get an MBA and he's done very well in his life. So my parents saw that as my middle brother and myself following in those footsteps, right? But no, you know, everybody's different. we've got our different personalities and characteristics. And so my parents, I'll tell you what, we finished the school year, go and get a summer job and kind of see how it goes. And in my parents' mind, it was, you know, he's going to go see the real world, work a real job and realize what it's like.
And then running back
come September, he's going to want to go back to school. Little did they know that this was going to backfire massively on them. So then let me just go back a year or two. When I was 15, my father had bought a little 18-foot Sea Ray, which an American boat built, like a speedboat with like 35, 40 knots. And we were living at the time in the south of Spain, in Marbella. And so at the age of 15, we went to the UK to an RYA training school to do the ICC, or commonly known as the International Certificate of Incompetence, as we like to call it. And a two-day course, we did the Powerboat Level 2 in a place called Chichester in the UK, which was great fun. But the RYA wouldn't issue my ticket until I was 16, because that's the earliest age, but I did it when I was 15. I got it when I was 16, and we were cruising along between, say, Gibraltar and a place called Frangirola. So we used to go to a place called Sotto Grande and Cabo Pino, beautiful ports along the coast there. Anyway, then fast forward a year or two later. So I was having this chat with my parents. My dad said, why don't you go and see if you can get a job at Marina Marbella? Now, Marina Marbella are the company that sold us our boat, and they were the Sea Ray dealers for Spain. And they had, at the time, they were the dealers for the Ferretti Group. So I walk into the office and I speak to the service manager, a guy called Mark Smith. Such a nice guy. I've got all the time in the world for Mark.
Can I ask, at this stage, you have the advantage, I presume, of being bilingual?
Yes, so bilingual. Fluent in Spanish. We went to the first 4 years were in Spanish school, and then after Spanish school, we went to an international school. So fluent, like no accent. I sound like a Spaniard. I've lost that accent since, so because I've been living in, you know, between France and Italy. And so I walked in this 17-year-old kid or 16, 17, and I asked for a job, anything. And they said, cool, yeah, we've got a summer job for you cleaning boats. So what you'll be doing is, you know, as the summer progresses, you're getting the client's boats ready to get them all cleaned for them to use it for the season. I was like, brilliant. So my first morning, I went with a chap and basically washing boats, soaping, brushing, scrubbing hulls, doing, you know, all the dirty jobs. I was more than happy to do it. I was getting paid for it. I was outside in the sunshine. It was summertime. On the boats, we could play the music while we're cleaning. Great fun. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is cool. But then about halfway through the morning or halfway through the day, Mark, my boss, comes up to me and he says, Tris, your dad has a boat with us, doesn't he? I said, yeah, he's got the little Sea Ray. It's a Sea Ray 185. And he said, do you have a boat license? Right. And I was like, yeah, I've got my international certificate of incompetence issued by the RYA. So he said, brilliant. I was like, okay. He goes, we need people to move smaller boats like what we have up and down the coast to deliver them to the ports for the clients. So when they arrive, the boat's there, it's tied up, it's ready. So they don't have to collect it from the shipyard. So it's like, okay. And he goes, okay, first job, I need you to take this Sea Ray, right? It's just come out the box, brand spanking new. Nobody has driven it. It's just been shipped from the States because they're made in the States. Take it from Marbella to a place called Puerto Banús. I was like, okay. And he said, are you going to be okay with that?
You've got your certificate. But yes, your actual experience of actually...
I'm not going to say it was any good. Probably a summer or two driving my dad's boat, which was a Sea Ray 185, and it was probably about 10, 15 years old. Not a brand new. It was a Sea Ray 240. I remember exactly what it was. It was a Sea Ray 240 bow rider, brand new out the box. So obviously it's quite intimidating. So I get on this boat. I was like, oh, God. Luckily, it was a flat, calm day. There was no wind. Because, you know, most boaters know the biggest enemy when maneuvering in the port is your wind or your currents. So luckily it was flat calm. And I had the crane put the boat in the water, and I was literally pushed the boat off the dock. So I was clear from the dock and then just drove her out smoothly. And it was a flat calm. I think it must have been June time. Sun was out. Nobody else around. I was like, you know what? Let's make the most of this. So I put the music on. I took my shirt off, get some rays on that pasty white English body. And I just cruised over to Puerto Banús, had the time of my life. Like, this is amazing. I'm getting paid to do this. And then when you arrive in Puerto Banús, we had another office there, Marina Bay office, and they told me where to dock it. And then you drop the keys off. And then I said, well, now what? And they said, well, now you wait for Mark's phone call. I was like, okay. So they said, just walk around, go and meet the other guys, go and see how we set everything up, how it all works. Like, okay, cool. I'll go and do that. And about 2 hours later, I get a phone call from Mark, and he says, Tris, have you ever driven a jet ski before? And at the time, it's, you know, I hadn't, right? But I might not have said that to Mark. I may have said to him, yes, multiple times. Okay. A little white lie there.
Surely that's smaller than what I've just done.
And well, exactly.
I'm full of confidence now from this experience.
That was my thing. I was like, jet ski, how hard can it be? Okay. A little white lie. You know, I saw the opportunity. I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity. But so I go to the office. They gave me a life jacket and the key, which is like also linked to like a man overboard strap. So I get in the jet ski. I don't even know how to start this thing. So I'm looking at the key, like, where does this key go? How does it work? And it's like a little plug. You got to plug it in. And then I start it. But what I didn't realize with jet skis is as soon as you start it, it's immediately got forward propulsion. So it's immediately moving forward. But luckily, I had already untied it. So, and it wasn't pointing towards another boat. It was pointing towards open water inside the port. That was lucky. That was no skill, no expectation. That was pure luck. And then off I go. I'm like, okay.
Oh, and were actually on it, though.
I was on it. Turn it on, so to start it, you got it. Because you've got the man overboard strap, you got to be on it to start it. Okay. So off I go. I go out Port Manus and I leave Port Manus and I start heading back to Marbella. Again, flat calm, opens it up. Amazing. First time driving a jet ski. People pay a ton of money to rent jet skis for 15 minutes, you know, in the summertime. Mm-hmm. They're paying me to do this. So you can see where this is going, as it's going to backfire later on with my parents. Anyway, so I took it into Marbella and that was my first day at work, right? And then I did that for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then I got a phone call from the big boss, one of the brothers that owned the company. And he called me to his office. I was like, okay. So I get to his office and he asked me, you know, how you find the job? You're enjoying it? I was like, oh yeah, all good, all good. And he said, well, we got this boat. It's a Freddy 68. Brand new. It's just been delivered to Formentera, which is the island just, you know, off Ibiza. It's a Spanish family and they need a deckhand for the next 2 to 3 months. Do you want to go? Bear in mind, I'm 17 at the time. So I don't know what legally, I don't think I can, but I said immediately, yes, I'm going. He goes, great. We're going to book you your tickets. You're flying out in 2-3 hours time. Okay. So I had to get a taxi, go home, convince my parents. Well, when I say convince them, I basically told them this is what I'm going to do. Nobody was going to stop me. I was like, I'm going, I'm leaving, I'm packing my bags. They say, well, you can't, you're 17. And then my dad kind of convinced my mom it's going to be okay and all these different things. So I get on the flight and then I fly to Ibiza and I land in Ibiza, get a taxi to the ferry terminal, get a ferry over to Formentera. And then I meet the family on board and we spent the next 2-3 months just cruising around the Balearics on this brand new Freddy 68. My job was deckhand, is basically doing the lines, rinsing the boat down in the evenings. And then and all my meals, I was sitting down with the family. The owner had a nephew who was exactly my age. And after work, we used to kind of like go jet skiing together and go and cause some trouble. And that was my first season in yachting. That was my introduction.
Wow. No turning back from there.
No turning back. So come the end of the summer, and I went to see the boss. I said, look, this is what I want to do. I want to work full time. And they got me a position full time. And then I had the chat with my parents. I was like, this is what's going to happen. And so it kind of backfired. But I think at the same time, there was progression. There was future progression to be had. And and it's worked out pretty well so far.
And then, I mean, from there, you worked from deckhand. Was it clear to you in the first little bit of actually this is really where I want to go? Or initially for the first year or two as deckhand, it was just fun and a great way to travel? I mean, at what stage did you go, actually, yeah, I want to go long term. I can see this as not just a job, but a career.
So for me, I didn't take really the conventional yachting route. So the conventional route is you get your basic safety training, your ENG1, and maybe you get your powerboat level 2, you become a deckhand. Because I was working for Marina Marbella, although I spent 2 months with the family in Spain, I was driving boats every single day. I mean, on some occasions during the summer, easily 7-8 boats a day. And so my drive experience grew, you know, exceptionally high in a very short period of time. So I managed to get my miles up and learning different drive systems like jet drive, stern, outboards, single screw, twin screw, so all these different systems, and gaining the knowledge in a very short period of time. And then in the winter time, it was very quiet. And then, so I went to actually speak to the boss. I said, I want to learn the engineering side during the winter because there's not much movement. So he said, okay, one of our chief engineers needs an assistant. So why don't you go and do work for him? I was like, brilliant. So half the year I was an assistant engineer and half the year I was moving boats around and then doing the 2 months as deckie on this Spanish family's boat. And I realized about a year in, I had worked it out what my career path was going to be. Okay, so I worked out that I would get, bear in mind when I started, I was about 16, I would need 5 years of doing what I'm doing now to get my first captain's gig because of the drive time that I was getting, the experience I was getting. And then through those first 5 years, you know, it was starting off smaller boats and then getting bigger and bigger. And then we were doing kind of, you know, international delivery. So picking up boats from Italy, bringing them to Spain, those kind of things. So after about a year, I kind of worked out, I need to continue this path. I need to go back to school, get my yacht master's and then grow from there. And I said to the technician, the engineer I was working with, really nice guy, he's actually a very good friend of mine, that by the time I'm 21, I will get my first captain's gig, right? And bear in mind, I was 16 when I said this, and he must have been in his late 20s. And he kind of laughed it off, thinking, you know, this kid, what does he know? There's no way anybody's going to employ a 21-year-old to captain their luxury yacht. But I had planned it out. So over those 5 years, I gained more experience. I went to get all my tickets, my yacht masters. And my birthday is in May. And so I was 21 in May. That following October, I got my first captain's gig on a 78-foot Dominator. And so I had achieved my goal, again, my first captain's gig by the time I was 21. And it was with a client of the company I was working for. And he offered me the position because I started working for him through the company. And after about 6-7 weeks, he realized he wanted a private captain and I wanted a private job. And so he offered me the position. I went to see my boss at the time and I explained it to him. And I said, but I don't want to burn my bridges. So if anything goes wrong, I want the opportunity to then come back to Marina Bay. He said, look, you're going with one of our clients. We know he's going to be looked after. If it doesn't work out, the job's still there for you. So I had nothing to lose. Okay. And now that was in 2007. And now in 2021, I'm still working for the same boss.
Wow.
Obviously, we've grown now to AWOL, yeah, which is 122 foot. So that's now, 13, 14 years. And yeah, here we are.
I think you're the winner so far, actually, for longevity. Nathan,
is
with the same guy for 10 or 11 years. But that really, I mean, that's a relationship.
That's a relationship. You know what I've learned in this industry is when you're first joining, you want to get the biggest boats because you think that's going to be the best job. What I've learned over the years, forget about the boats. Okay. The boats, they come and go. It's all about the people. Okay. The owner of this boat, we've kind of grown together and he, you know, he treats us as family. And, you know, there's always that captain owner line, which I like to implement, but he always likes to overstep it, not in a bad way, in a good way, because he just wants to be buddies, have a laugh. But, you know, we're a commercial yacht now, so there needs to be a line. And plus, I need to set an example for the rest of the crew as well. And yeah, so going back to my point, it's all about the people. And we're very lucky with this owner and he's continuously growing and we grow together and we've got a good team. So yeah, happy with that.
Can I ask then, because I'm sure you have an interesting perspective on this because you've kind of been both, is, you know, there's discussion of as you know, being a captain now is in some ways more challenging, I think, in the past 10 or 20 years. And it's certainly more competitive to get the jobs. And there's, you know, an industry debate in the background of how now there are much younger captains, you know, getting up the ladder quicker, getting all their certifications, getting to that point at a younger stage versus the older captain who maybe has more experience, but maybe less flexible, so to speak.
Yes.
And not to age you in any way, but it would strike me that you've had both experiences because you got your captaincy at a young age, but now, you know, whatever, 12, 13, 14 years on, you are the much more experienced captain. Where would you weigh in on that? Or what would you see as being the biggest growth as a captain? Because you had your, you know, you had your certifications, you had it on paper, but from that 21 or 22 year old to the captain you are now, I'm sure you see huge differences as well.
Absolutely. One thing is for certain, you can never beat experience. Okay, 100%. You can go to school as long as you want, but you learn over the years. It's easier to say once you've got the experience, because I look back now and some of the decisions I made, you know, it'll be very different if I was to make those decisions now. But that's a part of growing into your captaincy, is that part of your experience is making those mistakes. Now, going back to your point about the competitiveness within the industry between the younger and the older captains, I think there's pros and cons to both. I think with this is generalizing, this is not everybody. I think with the older captains, their kind of old school mentality, and there's nothing wrong with that, it's that it's in today's world, it doesn't really work. And by old school mentality, I mean kind of like barking orders, do as I say, not as I do, and not kind of leading from the front. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas the new school captains, it's a new generation. We do live in a different world, in a digital world now. We're a lot more open now about things in the industry, like, for example, lots of mental health issues, which is really important, especially within, you know, young men, you know, a lot of problems with that. And I think, you know, the younger generation are more open to it and open to sit down and have these conversations. I think also on the negative side is that with the younger captains, generalizing here, the management companies are a lot more, influential towards them. So they may, you know, push the younger captains to do certain things that the older captains will just tell them simply, no, we're not going to do that. And that's not right in my opinion.
They're a bit more influenced.
Well, they can. So, yeah, exactly. So they can be. And again, this is not, I don't want to, this is a generalization. I don't want to say all management companies or all captains. And like I was mentioning before, it, you know, the old school captains, again, not all of them are kind of more do it my way type thing. And, you know, not looking to change or improve certain things. But like I said, you know, you can't beat experience. And also I think technology has changed things a lot. So the way that bridge operations work is a lot different than it used to be, because we're a lot more digital now with things like, you know, the electronic charts, and it's all growing. So yeah, there's pros and cons to both. It is a very competitive industry again, but I've not personally experienced it because I've been with the same owner for, you know, 14 years. But I do know there's a lot of competition out there. And, you know, it's very rare that you hear of captains or crew that have such longevity. You know, when I compare it to myself, it seems like everybody thinks that the grass is greener on the other side, where what you should be doing is just watering your own lawn.
Yeah.
You know,
or actually, as I've discovered, the grass is just different shades. It's not greener.
Exactly.
It's just different shades of green.
You know? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah. This circles kind of nicely with this award you've had, which is mentorship, because, you know, one of the things that you were saying is, you know, having a bigger awareness of, in some ways, of your team. It's interesting that you're mentioning men's mental health, because, you know, really, I think a decade ago when you started out, that was not a topic that was really discussed at all. And in some ways, I think as an industry, we've trailed behind a little bit other industries in our awareness, in our development of certain things. It's great now to be seeing, and I've heard it from, you know, Brendan O'Shaughnessy was our first guest for this, and he's been involved in Yacht Crew Help. Similarly, Corrine is going to be broadcasting as well, and she's talking the same thing. I think the awareness of the individuals and the people and that whole team dynamics, and of course, in many ways, that rests on the shoulders of the captain as well, because you're not just in charge of the boat, you're in charge of this team of people.
Exactly. And it's the other thing as well is it's being the hardest thing is seeing it, knowing what to look for, because I think, you know, especially with men, it's a lot harder for them to express, you know, how what's happening inside. I think people turn things into a bit of a joke and kind of laugh things off, when in reality, what's happening inside is the total opposite. Now, I think the industry is especially hit hard because of the living conditions, because of the pressure on the job, because you are continuously living and working with people during the season, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a relatively confined space. So all these things, they just build up more pressure on the individuals. And yeah, you know, as a captain, you've got to be aware of all this. Because people talk about it, but it is serious, and it's happening, you know, every day that people are suffering. So what I find is the simple thing of just having a conversation, just sitting down one-on-one and just talking things through and, you know, and kind of relating to the person. And if you open up a conversation that, and you show your vulnerabilities, then that individual won't have that barrier. You kind of break through the barrier. They'll be then happier to speak about their vulnerabilities and their issues. And the most important thing is, remember, a happy boat is because it's got happy crew. And that's the most important thing. If you got crew that's not happy, and for whatever reason, whether it be mental health or other reasons, then the boat's not going to be happy. You know, the boat's going to be toxic. And that is the main responsibility, well, one of the main responsibility amongst other things of the captain, and building that kind of culture that we can talk to one another when we need to, because we're all humans. We all have good days. We all have bad days. We all get irritated with certain things. We all have family problems. We all have relationship problems. And when we're on board the boat, we are our family, because we are away from the family. So you need to be able to confide in each other when you are having these issues. And unfortunately, sometimes the timing isn't great, because you might be in the middle of a very busy charter season, in the middle of a very busy charter, and somebody's having, you know, issues with family or personal issues, and you've got the pressure of the charter on board amongst the other crew, and then you also got to deal with this. And then sometimes, and I've been victim of this, sometimes you just want to say, just do your job, you know, because there's so much pressure on everybody. And, you know, saying do your job is just the easy way out. But you can't, you know, as a captain, sometimes it happens. You just want people to do their job because there's so much other things you got to think about and take care of the charter guests, take care of the vessel, take care of the crew, all the organization. So, you know, it is very difficult, but it's, I think, being aware of it and just talking about it is definitely the first step moving forward.
Yeah, I've heard the same reflection back, and that also, you know, that getting that team dynamic right makes for a happy boat and makes for longevity as well. You know, when people are really enjoying their jobs, they're not looking at what the next job will be. And I think keeping a good dynamic with the same group and not having a huge amount of changeover has got to be easier to manage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a good saying that I like is better the devil you know, you know, because everybody has their quirks. You know, we've got, you know, I've got a crew member that's been with us now for 5 years. I love him to bits. I really do. But, you know, he has openly said that he made a mistake. I think we're having our end of season crew party. He openly said to me that sometimes he would hide during the day to avoid doing more work, which I thought was brilliant. I was like, bless him. And I kind of knew he was kind of doing it. But again, like I said, it's better the devil you know, because he's got so many positive things about him. Charter guests love him. The owner loves him. I love him. But then there's people that nobody's perfect. And the fact that he told me, I thought that's just brilliant. Now I'm going to hunt him down next season. And I'll be on his case. He will regret saying that. And, you know, people will come and go and people's lives change. And, you know, the yachting isn't a career for everybody. Some people want to do it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And other people like myself, you know, it's since, what's it now, 18 years. So it's, you got to understand that not everybody has the same goal. We, for example, my fiance and I have been working together for 9 years on the same boat. So we're a lot more personally attached. So, you know, the boat for us is part of our life and the boss is part of the family, and it's very different. And when we have new crew, like the seasonal crew come in, it's trickier because for them, it's a stepping stone. It's their first job. So we get a new deckhand every season. It's their first or second job and they're looking to grow. So their goals are different to, say, ours. And it's kind of learning how to accept that and kind of bring it both together.
And circling back to mentorship.
Yes. Mentors, this is the reason we're here. Yes.
Well, I mean, it's actually just a nice excuse why we're here. But along the way, I mean, it actually sort of sounds like your boss has been one of your mentors of helping see potential in you and help you grow. But have there been other mentors along the way? Because this is, you know, something that has now come back to you full circle.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been exceptionally lucky in my life in that I've had a very positive male influence in my life. And by that, I mean, you know, starting with my family, with my father and my two older brothers, you know, it's been... That was the foundations of growing into the person that I am today. And then, you know, then going into the work side of things is that I did have a mentor at Marina Marbella. I had two, actually. I would say one was Mark, who was the service manager, who was my boss. And the other one was a guy called Adrian, who was a captain, and he'd been at the company at the time, probably 7 to 10 years when I joined. He kind of took me under his wing and he started teaching me a few things. And then I would say you hit the nail on the head. I would say the owner has become quite a mentor in my life, because when we met, I was actually very young. I was in my very early 20s and he must have been in his early 40s when we met. So he already had, you know, lived twice the life I'd led. And not only mentorship within yachting, but just in life, things like, you know, like things like just being a human person, a decent human, financial things, you know, getting financial advice, you know, from him, you know, just knowing what to do in certain situations. So in that way, I have been very, you know, very lucky. And, you know, mentorship isn't just about teaching someone something to do something. It's about how people react in a very bad situation. So say, you know, say, for example, you're coming into port and it's really windy and you knock the boat against the dock. You know, a lot of captains start screaming and shouting and, you know, pointing fingers. The idea is, with time and experience, is to, you know, not get so worked up, is try to calm down, deal with the situation. You've trained your team, let them do their thing. And, you know, things, bad things will happen. And it's how you deal with it afterwards. And then afterwards, you do a debrief and you understand what happened and you try and work out how we stop this from happening again. And that's what we do on board. And that's purely because of the way I've been brought up and taught and through years of experience of doing this job. And now, like you said, I'm in a position now where I'm giving my experience to my team. So for example, I think when I got nominated for the mentorship award, they sent me an email saying, why do you think you deserve this award? And I didn't do a write-up. I actually sent them one of my videos, which was a video of me teaching Jason, who works with us, to dock the yacht. And it's his first time. And it was a bit risky because I decided to put it on camera. Okay, so it could have gone horribly wrong.
I've got my first driving lessons with my daughter. I can only compare it to that. We laughed, right? But I'm not sure if you're meant to.
Yeah, I think, you know, using somebody else's super yacht to teach somebody else to dock it for the first time, but he has to learn. And the reality is that during my time, what I didn't mention, at Marina Marbella for those 5 years, is part of my job was teaching new boat clients boat handling and maneuvering, anchoring, docking, refueling. So I had the experience of teaching and remaining calm and knowing when to take over the controls if I see things are going wrong and how to give clear instructions. If he doesn't understand the instructions I give, I try and say it in a different way. And I think, you know, the video kind of showed what we do on board and how I teach the deck team to, that's just one part of the job, how to maneuver. And then the other thing I'm doing with Jason as well is that it's his first chief mate's job, is managing people, which is the hardest part of the job. So he's got to manage the chase boat captain and the deckhand. And I think during the season, he realized how difficult it was, you know, because he had a few run-ins when he was deckhand with the first mate. And now he fully appreciates why it's so hard and why his first mates reacted and acted the way they did, because, you know, people sometimes can be quite difficult and find it sometimes hard to take instructions. But he's growing, he's learning, and I'm sure one day he'll be a very competent captain and manage his team well. And but for now, we're still training him up. He's still doing courses and just pushing him forward.
And just to touch on it, because that's the other interesting dynamic that is part of your particular super yacht, is that it has gone, and actually very rapidly, all things considered, because it's probably within 2 years, you've gone from being a captain on a super yacht to being a, as my kids love to say, a YouTube influencer. But, you know, you've kind of brought in with your videos reality as well to super yachting. I mean, I know that there's a tremendous amount of people that are just sort of intrigued and want to know what's on. But I think you have tried to portray not the good, the bad, and the ugly, but the reality of life on board, in opposed to the more scripted version. Can you tell us a little bit about Superyacht Captain and how that journey has been?
So, yeah, so the idea of the channel has now kind of grown and changed. But initially, the idea was to show what it's like to run a super yacht, because as we know, within the, you know, in the media, so to speak, the industry doesn't have a fantastic reputation. People outside the yachting industry think people that work on it are slaves to the owners. They get treated terribly. It's terrible hours, all these negative things, right? And I get it. But my experience has been very different. Okay. My experience is that the owner of the boat, like family, we comply with the regulatory hours of work and rest, which is MLC. We actually do comply with it. We get plenty of off time. The crew are paid exceptionally well. I think it's one of the most best paid industries on the planet, considering the amount of training you actually need to do. And the channel, so that was the initial part, is to show what it's kind of really like. And then a lot of it, people started to use the channel to not only understand the industry, but to learn things. So we've done videos about how we refuel the vessel. We've done videos about how we anchor the vessel. I've done tutorial videos, videos of the chef doing a full dinner service, videos of the stewardesses doing turndowns and doing the table settings each evening. And then from there, the channel has kind of really grown. It's quite interesting. We did a poll. I did a poll in October about the type of people that watch the channel. And we got, I think, over 2,000 responses, and 20% of which were actual boat owners. So it could be any size of boat, which I found really interesting. So boat owners are watching the channel to, I guess, learn how to different things, how to run their boat maybe. And then it obviously grew from there. And then we started doing, sponsorships with other yachting companies and brands, which is really good. And then doing boat shows. So I was hoping to do it this year, but obviously not. But we did the Monaco show, got on board a few yachts, did a few tours. But what's net, there's loads of channels doing tours at boat shows, but there's not a single channel that's doing a tour with a captain like myself with a Master 3000 qualification. So you're getting a captain's perspective, because from a captain's point of view, when you're looking at a boat, or an engineer's point of view, is very, very different to what an owner or potential buyer is looking at. So we want to look at things like the stability, the build quality, the range, what was it built out of? Where is it built? Is it an Italian yacht? Is it a Dutch yacht? These are the kind of things we're looking at. Whereas from an owner, they're looking at the aesthetics. They're looking at the size of the cabins. They're looking at, does it have a jacuzzi? Does it have a gym? So that kind of grew part of the channel as well. And then during the lockdown, I did quite a number of live streams. So for the viewers that were interested, they would send in their questions and I'll start answering them live. Those did pretty well. I'm actually hoping to do one later this evening. Not sure yet. And the channel, to be perfectly honest, within our industry has had very positive results and very negative results. A number of people within the industry don't like what I'm doing, which is fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't think, I don't know if it's a jealousy thing or they just don't agree with it or they don't like the content. I'm not sure what it is, but there are people in the industry that love it. And I was doing a course of Blue Water a few weeks ago. The end of last year. And there was one young guy who's getting the industry who came over and wanted to talk to me. He said, I watched all your videos and you're the reason I want to join the industry. And when I get feedback like that, that's really positive. Amazing. He wants people want to take selfies and things now, which is cool, but not the reason that I wanted to do it. So it's had pros and cons. It can be a lot of pressure sometimes to make the videos during the season. because my main focus in the season. And people are asking me, when can you edit these videos? And the answer is, I do the nighttime anchor watches. So during my anchor watch, I do every half an hour, we do our tour. And then during that time, I do the editing for the videos for the channel. And it's great. And it's continued to grow. You know, we're averaging close to 1 million views every month. We've got, I think, over now 120,000 subscribers, and it's continuing to grow. And yeah, who knows where it'll go for this year.
Well, and can I just say as well, for allowing a real perception of what goes on board, you know, I'm not a big television watcher. I cannot actually have an opinion on Below Deck because I have never watched it. But in some ways, I think to inspire people to what the reality of life on board is, I think is great, because there is such a perception in general media, be it British or American, or I even know myself of coming back to Ireland and I would say what I'm doing. And firstly, people don't really know that there's a super yacht industry. You know, in Ireland, loads of people sail, but there's a whole industry and you're in media for this industry, you know, to allow people what the reality of the industry is and what life on board is really like. You know, of course, you know, there's fun points, but for the most part, from everyone I speak to, for captains and crew, most of it is really hard work. And sometimes, you know, not very much personal space, not very much personal freedom to do what you want. And it's like anything, you know, there are some fantastic boats to work on and there are some more grueling. All of them will be part of your experience. But I think it's great to see what life actually is like on board. And not just, I think even what you were saying of looking at a boat from the captain's point of view, reminds me of chatting with an Australian captain last year, and he had always been on different types of vessels, but going on to this Monin super yacht, he looked at it and went, ah, this is great. Now this is a boat. And listening to his perception of the boat was really interesting, because it was from a captain's point of view. It wasn't how glitzy it was or how lovely and big the rooms were or what toys they had on board. It was, ah, this is a boat I can really drive. I like the bridge. I like how it's laid out. You know, it is a very different perception.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think also just to give a big thanks to the owner, because I would say the majority of, you know, super yacht owners won't allow somebody to making videos on board their boats and, you know, showing everything that happens on board is very rare. But, you know, the owner loves the channel, all his friends watch it, and his kids love it as well. So big thanks to that. And yeah, going back to your point also, you know, the great thing about working in industry is for a young person coming in is it definitely builds character. You learn to live with other people from all walks of life and from different cultures. Mm-hmm. It is really hard, grueling work. But, you know, I would rather be out on a yacht doing, you know, washing, scrubbing the decks than doing a 9-to-5, going into the city in an office, you know, day and night. And the other thing is that when they're on board is all their expenses are covered. So if they wanted to, by the end of their season, they can walk off with a lot of money and at a young age, go traveling around the world comfortably. And, you know, it's there's pros and cons to, I believe, every industry. And yeah, like I said, it builds character. It's not for everybody. Some people want to do it for a few years. Some people want to do it for a career. And it brings all walks of life to the industry. I've met people from all walks of life, like you wouldn't believe, and people you wouldn't imagine ever working in this industry, but it attracts certain people. And yeah, like you said, there are some very good owners. There are some very bad owners. There are some very good management companies. There are some very bad management companies, but that's all part of the experience and building your career.
So Tristan, before we go, if you were to give one or two or even three, it depends on But if you were to give a few pieces of advice to upcoming crew who are coming in, what would be your sage wisdoms for those that are kind of early in their career and looking forward?
It's quite interesting to say, because I actually got an email. I get quite a lot of emails from people who watch the channel, and I get lots of email from people that are my age when I started, in, you know, their mid to late teens, who are looking to kind of finish school and quit school and join the yachting industry. Now, my advice is, looking back now, I've reached now a place where I've got a Master 3000 ticket, okay? And because I didn't finish my GCSEs, I can't go back to school and go and do the Master Unlimited, because you need to have certain GCSEs for that. I could go back and do my GCSEs, but I don't want to. So just what I would say is to spend that extra year or two, finish your GCSEs and your A-levels, because the yachting industry might not be for you. Now, I won't put people down, because I did the opposite. So I don't want to be one of those people, do as I say, not as I do. But just spend that extra year or two, just finish that school, because on the long run, it will be worth it. And the other thing that I see a lot with the younger people coming in, it's not about the size of the boat you're working on. It's about your people that you're working with. And my final bit of advice is, don't chase the money. Okay. The money will come. Chase the happiness of the work and the life experience while you're young and while you're getting your experience and your qualifications.
Thank you. Sage advice. I kind of sage advice, to be honest, for any young person, whether you're going into the yachting industry or not. You know, I'm saying this to my daughters at the moment of right now. And I think right now for younger people, it is a lot more challenging. You know, when we were 17 or 18, the world was our oyster. We could go anywhere and do anything. This past year has been much tougher on the younger generation of their perception going forward. And, you know, sort of my advice is, keep all your options open, because you might think you absolutely know what you want to do at 18 or 20, or sometimes even 25, or even possibly 30. But most people I know of my generation, which is a teeny bit on from yours, has been, most of us have had about 3 or 4 careers, you know, and you never know what experience and qualifications you have along the way when they come in handy. So keep your
exactly. I mean, look, I'll give you the prime example is, look at Ricky Gervais. He didn't start The Office, his first program, till he was in his 40s. Mm. You know, that's when he then became the global superstar that he is today. So, you know, there's always time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Tristan, so lovely to catch up with you again. And
thank you so much for having me.
Turn around and actually hear the story behind, you know, the super yacht captain, to, as you have now coined the phrase, and got the logo and the t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, can I say many congratulations? I know you have been up there on the A-Crew Crew Awards before, but I actually think getting the mentorship is a great compliment to you, because it does show that you have been recognized by your peers to be a leader and a teacher. And it sounds like when you get down to the grassroots, teaching and leading has been, you know, part of your experience that you've been growing up. So
it has, yeah. Thank you very much for your kind words, and obviously thank you to everybody that nominated and voted, and the judges for the final decision. And honored to be, you know, part of the A crew, and honored to have won the mentorship award. There are other great mentors out there, so thank you very much.
Wonderful. Well, stay well, stay safe, and of course, if you haven't already caught Tristan, you just need to go to YouTube and look up Super Yacht Captain, and a plethora of experience and instruction is there waiting for you on YouTube if you haven't yet seen him in person. And stay well, stay safe. And we have been chatting with Tristan Mortlock, who is the A-Crew Crew Award winner this year for mentorship and also known as the Super Yacht Captain. Thanks so much for listening today. Stay well.
Super Yacht Radio.